Welcome, listeners, to a podcast that seeks to ignite the flames of inspiration and empowerment within the ServiceNow community. I'm Farah Wells, your host and the director of Linking Humans, the number one global partner for ServiceNow recruitment. Join us on this journey as we venture deep into the world of ServiceNow leaders, discover the very essence of their motivations and the unique mindset that paved the way for their remarkable success. Okay, so welcome back, everybody, for a fantastic new episode. So I've got an amazing guest with me today. His name is Paul. He has spent the last 19 years working in IT, and of those, around 15 years working on IT service management system implementations. So from Peregrine Digital Workflow, HP Service Manager, and since 2015, ServiceNow. Now, his primary ServiceNow experience is as a project manager and engagement manager to work with customers to implement ServiceNow, either as a new greenfield implementation or to add and change functionality to meet new business requirements. So, Paul, a huge welcome to you and thank you for coming on today.
No, thanks very much for having me. It's great to have the opportunity to sort of share a bit more about some of the work I've been doing and how I got to where I am, really. So, thanks.
That's amazing. And you know what? That would have been my first question, because, you know, for many people who are our listeners who perhaps, you know, don't know too much about your background, you know, it'd be great just to hear your story, how you first got introduced to ServiceNow in 2015 and your journey from then onwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's probably a sort of series of sort of accidents and opportunities, really, that sort of found myself doing what I'm doing. Way sort of back in 2006, I joined Electronic Data Systems, as it was at the time, as a project manager, really just with no specific kind of brief, just, you know, here are some projects, here's a customer, you know, go and help them. During that time, the company then started to develop their own version of what we would now consider to be ServiceNow on one platform. And we had a project with a big government customer that we had to work on. And I kind of got assigned to that and started working with some people from the States and some other sort of senior people in Europe to help kind of put that all together. That then kind of grew a bit of confidence and bit by accident, bit of opportunity. People say, "Oh, and you know, now we've got these other customers. We quite like what you're doing. Can you help us with that?" So, started to get these sort of bigger projects, a little bit more complex. Started kind of getting more in front of customers as well. So rather than just being the guy managing the plan and managing the risks, it was actually sort of talking to customers about how it was going, what we were doing, and then kind of pushed forward a bit more to kind of like, well, we've got an escalation with a customer now. Can you go and deal with that? And so started getting more opportunities to get involved and have those sometimes difficult conversations. And that kind of built my understanding of both how to manage projects, how to manage stakeholders and customers, and then starting to, as well as the technology that we were implementing at the time. And then, in 2015, I got this opportunity through to work on ServiceNow. I hadn't really heard of it before. But it seemed like a good step on from what I'd been doing previously, and again that opportunity kept coming in terms of, right, well, here's a project, or here's another project, here's three projects, and that's kind of how I ended up. And I think going through each project, I've always sort of picked up a bit more and a bit more knowledge about the product. So with ServiceNow, work with a very, very good bunch of people who understand the product, technical people, architects, business analysts, and that's sort of just helped me on that journey to where I am now, which is project implementations and enablement, really. So
no, that sounds amazing. And you know, it's like, did you always know that you wanted to be client facing, or is it something that happened naturally and you thought, oh, I quite enjoy this? Is it something you set out at the beginning of your career?
It's an interesting point, actually, because when I first got involved in project management, it wasn't within IT at all. I was actually organizing office moves, and I was working with removal men and architects and people like that, and sort of quite enjoyed that interaction with different people. When I moved into IT, it was still a little bit back room. I wasn't, the, you know, the customer was a big government department. I was probably a number of layers down, and it was kind of fine. It was safe, but actually a bit daunting that first time. Oh, you're going to go and talk to the senior stakeholder. What? I don't want to talk to them. But through some good mentoring, some guidance and help, you kind of learn what customers are looking for. You get a little bit more confident about what different stakeholders are looking for. And, you know, there were some mistakes along the way, you know, which you then have to learn from. You know, I've walked out of a few meetings, you know, initially with, you know, metaphorically sort of tail between your legs going, well, that didn't really go very well. But kind of having to take that on the chin and actually going, oh, right, well, next time I go and talk to that kind of customer, I need to be more precise, or I need to have more kind of data available to help the argument. So it wasn't necessarily the thing I set out to do, but it is, I do get satisfaction from it, because ultimately in having those conversations with a customer, even if they're difficult, if you can walk out of that with a positive outcome, whether that's we've just agreed to disagree, or even at this point, you know, we've even better, you know, we've actually agreed a plan, everyone's happy, we can move on, that's quite enjoyable. You know, you can walk out of that feeling quite satisfied. So yeah, it's something I enjoy now, because you understand a bit more about how the customer ticks. You can then relay that back to your team to help make sure that as a partnership we're doing all the right things. So
definitely, that's really good. And you kind of said a really interesting point when you talked about, you know, how to deal with like difficult customers and stakeholders. Like, for me, like, I always think, like, why would a stakeholder be difficult? Like, why do you think that is, that sometimes happens?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I've talked about this with a few colleagues over the last few years, because not everyone involved in the project has maybe been involved in that journey from the start. And if you're in my history working as a partner or supplier, there's sometimes, yeah, there's different levels of expectation around what the project is. So at a top level, you know, the sponsor, the budget holder, you know, they will have agreed the project. They've had that discussion, and they've been sold the value of this partner coming in to help, and yeah, brilliant, get on with it. But then when you go down the tiers, when you actually start the project, you go to the kickoff, you've got those people who are working at a grassroots level who are looking at this going, oh, actually, you're changing the way I work. The tool I really like working with, you're going to get rid of. I really like doing what I do. I've got a lot of control, and I don't like the idea of relinquishing control. And so as you sort of get into the project, that's where you have to sort of start sort of managing those stakeholders and kind of organizing, because there will, you know, people will be looking at it saying, I'm going to lose my job. I don't necessarily like this, or it's going to change my role in a way that I'm not comfortable with. And you're having to sometimes be that messenger, you know, and, you know, the sponsor isn't going to be in every meeting. So it then becomes the trick of the project manager is then working at all of those different levels to make sure that you bring everyone on the journey. Some people will take longer than others. And where possible, trying to help those people, trying to explain why we're making the changes, what the impact will be, how it's actually going to benefit them in the long term. So it's quite a complicated sort of set of communications you have to work out. But yeah, there will be conflict. And I think what's been even more interesting is, having recently worked inside a customer, it's also helped me appreciate just how much has to go on inside a customer as well to actually enable the project to be a success, in terms of getting people to think about, you know, their roles and responsibilities and how that might change, actually getting people to sort of not just focus on their day job but actually focus on the project. So yeah, lots of things to think about.
That's really interesting. And you know, it's true, it's like human nature, isn't it? It's like the fear of change, you know,
people, yes,
don't really like change, do they? So yeah, I can imagine that's, you know, that can go. What like, you did raise some like fantastic points about how you can like overcome it. Do you have any other like top like tips that you could share that could help other project managers in the same situation, same boat at the moment, that are having quite difficult stakeholders to deal with, and they kind of get to the point now thinking, God, everything I say, they you know, it's a fight. So what tips would you kind of give those guys?
That's a really good question. I hate to give a consultancy answer of it depends, but I think you kind of look at it at different levels, I think, in terms of the at a top level, if the project's kind of struggling and, you know, I don't know, the budget's overrunning or the time is overrunning, I think as a project manager, you've got to kind of go back to basics on that to get all of your information and get your ship steadied in terms of your plan, your risks, your assumptions, your dependencies, because if it's late, it's got to be a reason. But if it's not very, if you can't articulate that reason, all you're going to find from a customer perspective is, you know, if you can't articulate the reason, I have no kind of trust in what you're telling me. So it's being able to rebuild that trust, I think, in having a good plan, good set of assumptions and dependencies and those kind of things. When you come down a level and you're talking to the team who are actually helping you implement this, you know, your service delivery managers, your service desk managers, your process owners, I think it's more about trying to keep the engagement going and understand maybe what the issues are. And during a ServiceNow implementation, you've got quite a few opportunities. You've got the kickoff, you've got workshops, you've got show and tells, you've got testing. There's all sorts of points in the project. And I think in my experience, the key thing has been keeping up that communication, you know, whether that's through weekly status reports, whether that's like almost like an open door session each week to say, come in, just talk to us. What's on your mind? What's concerning you? Because then you're being a bit more proactive about it and you're trying to build the bridge. Otherwise, yeah, sometimes, because if you don't try and build the bridge, I think you're just going to sit with, you know, lots of people with their arms crossed waiting for you to tell them something they don't really want to hear. So I think if you can keep the door open and keep those conversations going, and I think it's been an underlying principle of all my work is trying to build that partnership with everyone, because if everyone's not on board, you're not going to get the momentum you need to keep the project going, because people always find something more interesting to do if they don't like it. Oh, I'm too busy on my day job, or my manager says I'm not to do this for the time being, or, you know, I don't have anything to add, this is up to you to make it happen, and that doesn't tend to result in a successful outcome. So, yeah,
that's amazing. There's some great advice there, definitely. And you know I always feel that, you know, in this, particularly this type of job role, there needs to be an element of resilience, right? So you need to be able to navigate the ups and the downs for sure. Like, just you personally, how have you built resilience, and what strategies do you kind of, you know, employ yourself to kind of bounce back from setbacks?
It's a really good question, and something I'll be completely transparent. I have struggled with a little bit, because I invest quite a lot in the project and being successful. You know, just as I've talked about in terms of engagement with stakeholders, that whole partnership thing. So when something has gone wrong and you kind of don't quite know why that might have been, or you've tried your hardest, but it's still not, you know, it is sometimes quite hard. So what I've tried to, and with some help of sort of mentors along the way, is trying to rationalize this a little bit in terms of, well, what could I have done? Could I have informed this event? And sometimes the answer is just not, you know, the customer company have had a budget cut. They're no longer able to do something that's now resulted in this project, you know, going a different direction. There's nothing you can sort of do about that. Have I done something like this before? And then if the answer to that is yes, well, let's try and draw on that experience. But if the answer to that is no, well, you've done the best you could in the situation. You know, it's something you've never been faced with. So, you know, try and rationalize it that way. And that kind of it, trying to have that honest sort of retrospective, really, I suppose, of how you got into that situation. Because for a long time, I used to sort of beat myself. Oh, I can't believe it. You know, I failed. You know, we've not been able to do what was asked of us. And actually, what I've sort of learned over time is that failure, that has just got to be a lesson learned. You have to put it down to experience, sort of dust yourself down occasionally and move on. But trying to rationalize it into those little compartments has helped a little bit to sort of,
not
just blame yourself, I suppose. Yeah,
definitely. And I think that, you know, that is the problem these days, that a lot of people do take a lot of burden on their shoulders and they do dwell. And then it makes your mental health deteriorate. You know, it's not good for it. And, you know, there's a real big drive you know, in today's world about mental health and making sure that, you know, you do look after yourself. And how do you look after yourself, Paul, like from that perspective, you know, just to make sure that you don't get too stressed out, you don't burn out as well? Like any habits you follow or anything like that?
Yeah, it's just, so I do like having colleagues I can speak to. So there's a bit of that sort of downtime where you can sort of come out of a meeting. I know sometimes remotely that's a bit difficult, but you know, if you've had a tricky meeting or you are sort of feeling a bit under duress, having the opportunity to sort of chat with somebody and go, blimey, you know, what was all that about? You know, and just having a bit of a sort of decompress, I think I find sort of initially most useful, just to be able to share the kind of conversation, perhaps check myself in terms of what I'm thinking versus what somebody else was thinking. Did that go well? Not very well? No, it didn't go very well. What do you think that was? You know, and having that conversation. And that, I think, helps diffuse quite a lot of that initial kind of maybe frustration or anxiety or, you know, that's building up in your brain. Beyond that, as probably few people know, I'm quite a keen cyclist. So the sort of the post-work kind of thing is probably just to get out on my bike, have some fresh air. I live up in the Peak District. You can have a go on a bike ride out in the countryside and take it out on that, really, which then usually by the end of a bike ride, I'm feeling a lot better about myself. So
yeah. You've ridden away all the stress.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really good. So definitely. And you know, you kind of like mentioned a really interesting point about, you know, it's like essentially it's like it's good to talk, right? It's good to talk it over. You know, obviously, you know, like you mentioned that you're working remotely, and so many other people work remotely as well. I know in an office environment, you could easily like just go and stand by the coffee machine and have that kind of like chin wag, but how do you then organize it when everybody is working from home? Do you like, how do you kind of organize that communication so that you do have that chat? That makes sense.
It does make sense. I mean, I think, you know, you're always going to have a set of formal kind of structures that you've got, you know, whether it's your daily stand-up or your weekly project meeting where you're trying to get the team together. What I tend to encourage is then sort of an internal team meeting, you know, particularly when you're on a customer project, just puts people in a bit of a safe space that you can just sort of have that opportunity to vent a little bit and kind of get people to honestly kind of share what they're thinking. Sometimes people don't even want to do that. They'd much rather work on a one-to-one basis. So, you know, if it is a case of my door is always open, you know, we'll just have an ad hoc one-to-one. You know, in my previous company, quite often, maybe at 5 o'clock, just have a sort of pick up the phone, how's it going, what are you thinking, and have that opportunity just, and you know, and somebody go, oh yeah, tell you what, this is really been a bit of a challenge this week. And that might not have come up in a team environment, but on a one-to-one basis, people are quite happy to have a bit more of a chat. So it's a bit of a mixture, really. But I think as the manager, it's kind of up to me sometimes to be able to open the door to sort of say, look, you know, happy to have a chat, but some people might not always even want to proactively pick up the phone. They think you're too busy, or you're not really bothered. So doing it the other way is sometimes quite useful, just as on a bit of a, you know, Friday afternoon, how's it going? You know, and see what people think. So
yeah, definitely. And I love that. And also it's about letting people know that, look, my door is open, you know, just give me a message and we'll have a chat. And yeah, no, that's great, guys. And you know, obviously for someone who wants to move into the project management space, like, is there any particular like certifications or any sort of thing that they need to do to learn before they make that leap into the project management space?
I think there is, yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a mix of certification and experience, I think. And I think if you focus firstly on the sort of certification side, there's a lot that people can talk about project management. There's a lot there, you know, there's agile, hybrid agile, waterfall. There's all sorts of methodologies. But I think if you sort of center yourself around either one of the PRINCE certifications or PMI, you know, within that, you know, you can then start to sort of think about what type of project management you want to look at. So from a personal perspective, I kind of went down a formal project management route, which was the Project Management Professional, PMP, which is managed by the Project Management Institute. And that was all very much about how you do your plan, how you do your risk, how you do your budget, how do you account for what specifically is a risk in the mitigation plan, all of that kind of stuff. And then as I got more into the ServiceNow stuff, building out, we did an agile certification on top of that. So you start to sort of build up. So I think, you know, it does help if you center yourself on that more formal kind of project management approach, because you know how to build a plan, you know how to run that plan, you know what dependency is, you know what a milestone is. So, and as I mentioned earlier, that gives confidence to stakeholders and customers that you can run a project and you've got all the mechanics that sit underneath it. I think when you overlay ServiceNow across that, there's benefit. You know, for example, there's the service strategic portfolio management application within ServiceNow. That's how you can run your agile projects. I think it's a very useful tool for how you can manage your project, keeping everything under control, and you know, you can put your plan in there, you can manage your risks. And so I think you can layer these other things on. And interestingly, ServiceNow, just at the end of last year, introduced the technical project manager career path, which is also very useful. So one of the graduates who works for me at my current company, he's taken the associate technical project manager course. You know, it's quite interesting, talks a little bit about how to use SPM, talks a little bit about Agile, talks a little bit about all those things. And that's actually a path now through to professional. So I think, you know, the answer on the certification side is, yeah, there's a few different pieces to pull together. I think the other bit underpinning that is just there's no shortage for experience. Yeah, so is that the right word? But basically, doing the starting small, you know, could be in a ServiceNow context, doing a little upgrade project, doing a little portal project, but yeah, knowing a start and an end and what do you have to do to get there. Building your confidence then, and then starting to take on the sort of stuff, bigger, more complex stuff. So maybe a single application on a greenfield, or multiple applications on a greenfield, or implementing an integration where you've then got to kind of go and get some people from another area to then actually integrate with ServiceNow. So those two bits combined, I think, is going to be that journey, if that helps at all. So.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. That's great. And you know, obviously ServiceNow, you know, it rapidly evolves, you know, the new features, new updates. How can young professionals or even experienced people stay up to date with just making sure their skills, you know, stay relevant and in demand?
It's a really good question, actually, because I think information seems to come from so many sources now. You know, we've got, you've got the ServiceNow sort of documentation, you've got the partner portal, there's Now Create, there's sort of global solutions framework, so there's already a whole bunch of stuff with that. Then you add in sort of LinkedIn and other partners and people posting stuff about what they've done. Yeah, so there's a huge amount of information to kind of absorb. I think from a project perspective, it's kind of keeping an eye on those certain areas. So, you know, whether that's developments in agile thinking through PMI or prints, whatever those kind of things are, but kind of just keeping understanding as the terms move and change. And then I think from a ServiceNow perspective, yeah, for me, I mostly focus on kind of Now Create, what's changed there, keeping an eye on the updates, and then looking around at LinkedIn, really, because there's usually people in my network who are either architects or developers, or, you know, have got their ear to the ground more than I have, that can kind of flag stuff up going, oh, have you seen this new thing for Vancouver? Or, you know, and you can kind of go, oh yeah, that's interesting, that might apply to my project. So yeah, it's kind of a combination, yeah. Really.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's really good. And just kind of reflecting on your own career, what advice would you give to sort of young ServiceNow professionals who are looking to kind of, you know, follow a similar path to what you have done?
Yeah, I think there's two sort of areas to that, because I think there's a sort of technical project manager, and then there's the more a sort of technology agnostic project manager, a bit of a dinosaur person like me, who's probably, you know, not so well versed. But I think if you're interested in the technical side, then I think, you know, you developing your trade as a technical developer, or, you know, and that side, but then at the same time, learning and understanding the agile principles of actually what does it take to run a little project, thinking about those kind of elements alongside doing your actual implementation. And that's, I think that's kind of one route in. I think the other route, I say, is going to be starting as a, you know, as a junior project manager, or if you've perhaps had project management experience in another industry, is to sort of come in, understand the basics both from a project management perspective and a ServiceNow perspective. So that maybe do your certified sysadmin. It may be just doing some of the intro courses you can get on Now Learning. Might be doing the associate technical, you know, the associate project manager course in Now Learning. And then, yeah, just kind of being realistic in terms of what project size you want to take on, not being too ambitious because you could find yourself, you know, underwater quite quickly. But yeah, just thinking of maybe say starting working on a managed service team where you're managing upgrades and you're managing releases of new functionality. You then start to think, well, actually, I could probably manage an application implementation, and I'll manage this developer over here, and then yeah, start to build. Really?
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. That's some really great advice. And you know, like obviously, you kind of mentioned about, you know, if you're a project manager, but you know, outside of ServiceNow, how easy is it for people that have no ServiceNow experience but fantastic project managers within IT? How easy is it for them to learn ServiceNow? Is it something they could do on the job, or is it something that they should kind of before do? Like do some research and before jumping in?
I think that you'd have to do a bit of research before sort of jumping in. I think the project principles probably still hold in terms of, have you got a plan? Have you got, you know, all of these kind of things. I think that the trick I seem to sort of found with ServiceNow is many of the customers you talk to, certainly as a partner, you know, they don't know what they don't know. And if you sort of present a plan with a set of assumptions, and those assumptions are things like, you will provide us all this data, you will provide the business change, you will kind of do the training, and they kind of look at those and go, yeah, fine. With that knowledge and experience, you can actually help the customer more with those kind of deliverables. So instead of just saying, you've got to do that, you can help prime them a little bit and say, well, actually, you know, to get all your data together, you're going to have to fill out this spreadsheet. It's going to be used for this. And if you don't deliver that, we're going to delay this part of the project plan. And it's back to what I was talking earlier about partnership, is it's kind of trying to help the customer, bring them along on that journey. I think if you just stood there standalone and went, that's your job, go and do that. Mm-hmm. You get into that conflict quite quickly. Some people like to manage like that. But for me, if you've got the knowledge of the product and you've got that kind of understanding, it's going to help you with the customer. I think the other kind of benefit is you can then have more informed conversations with your own team about what is it. So when your team go, oh, I don't know, it's a business rule with an update set, that, you know, you understand what that kind of means, mm-hmm. rather than going, yeah, fine. Yeah. So I think it definitely would pay. And I think now more than ever, as I mentioned with Now Create, Now Learning, there's so much information now available from ServiceNow that can help you with that. It's not really an excuse not to know something about it. So
that's really, really like great. And also, like what we mentioned earlier, it starts to build that trust. You know, if the customer sees that you're helping them, they're probably going to be less of a difficult, you know, stakeholder to manage. So I think that's such an amazing approach. So yeah, fantastic. And just kind of like talking, because obviously now you're at a level where you are sort of managing others, and you know, you've got to you know, quite a senior position. How have you kind of managed to stay humble, you know, which I have to ask, you know, because you do come across really humble, but obviously you've been ambitious enough to get where you are today. How have you managed to stay so grounded, and you know, what advice would you give to others?
It's a really good question, because I think my initial sort of thing that was springing to my head is I'm not quite sure. I think it's, for me, it's maintaining that kind of the sort of level of interaction with the team, not kind of, because if you kind of maybe a bit too full of yourself, you're going to be sort of, well, I'm the manager, you're there to do that. And I think that breaks some of the kind of the relationship that you maybe have with the team. You know, when you turn up on the call, everyone else goes quiet waiting for you to speak. So for me, it's kind of trying to keep a step back from that and keeping that communication with the team, making sure that everyone's kind of on board. If there are issues, trying to understand what those are, and also taking responsibility when it's down to me, and you know, making sure that I support the team. So if my team say, well, we've got a really big problem with this and I don't do anything about it, because it's like, well, I'm the project manager, I'm over here, it doesn't really work. So for me, it's trying to keep on in a line with the team, helping out where I can. And to me, that's the sort of the vision of success. I think I don't know if that answered the question really, but that's kind of what I try to do to kind of keep it relevant, make sure I'm kind of helpful and useful, not trying to just sort of say, well, I'm at the top now, so over to you kind of guys.
Yeah, definitely. There's some like fantastic leadership qualities, you know, and you're totally right. You know, to get the best out of people, they have to feel valued, and they're not going to do that if you're talking down to them. But then also you're going to get the best out of them, and you're going to feel great as well, because then, you know, the project will be a success because, like you say, everyone's going to be on board. So, yeah, I think that's amazing. Look, I've got one final question.
Okay.
Anyone that's seen Back to the Future, you know, if you had a time machine and you went back in time and met your 21-year-old self, what advice would you give him, Paul?
So I would like a DeLorean, actually. I would kind of be quite nice.
Right?
I think in some respects, and it might sound a bit odd, but I think is perhaps being a little bit more ambitious when I was earlier in my career. I think when I first moved into IT, I was working for a big American IT company. There were lots of people around me at all sorts of different levels and I kind of just kind of got on with my job and did the best I could in that kind of circumstance. And it was only through sort of recognition of others that I ended up kind of working on other projects, because it was like, well, you seem quite capable. And I think what I know now, I think it would be a case of maybe having more proactive conversations with my manager or, you know, people, see more senior people in the projects, to maybe try and shadow them or get more experience early. So it was for me, it was a bit of a slow burn for a few years, kind of just doing my thing and doing it well. But yeah, you didn't necessarily kind of get the recognition and the kind of elevation up through the company for bigger projects. So I think that would be my kind of guidance is, you know, don't be afraid to be ambitious in terms of saying, well, actually, can I help you with that program report? Can I sit in on the executive steering committee just to see what's going on? Can I maybe kind of do a secondment? You know, so having those kind of conversations that, whilst, you know, it just give you that access to see how other things work. I kind of had to learn it one thing at a time. You go, all right, I'm on a bigger project. All right, now I'm learning how to, and I think that would have helped, certainly.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. So look, thank you so much, Paul. It's been amazing to talk with you, and, you know, for the advice that you've given around the project management space is just fantastic, and it's so helpful. And, you know, I think your team are so lucky to have such an inspirational leader like yourself. So thank you so much for your time today.